Okay, welcome back to the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs. Our topic this evening is recycling CO2 emissions into plant nutrients, and our speaker is Gary Lewis. Before we start our question and answer period, I'd like to inform you about our programs for next week. Next Thursday at 12 noon at Erickson's Family Restaurant on Mayor McGrath Drive, Bruce Miller, the Liberal MLA for Edmonton Glenora, we'll be speaking on welfare and social justice. Then on Friday, February 1st, again at 12 noon at Erickson's, Brian Mason, the leader of Alberta New Democratic Party, will be speaking on the key issues facing Alberta. I also want to tell you that all SAGPA programs are advertised on our website, www.sagpa.ca. Where you can also listen to the audio of sessions, and you can post your comments and questions on the website. Again, that's www.sagpa.ca. And now we're going to be passing the pail. So a couple of my colleagues will be passing that pail, and remember what I said about paper making less noise than silver. And now to our question period. We've had a fascinating introduction to this new method by Gary, and he's going to be up here to answer your questions. And he'll be assisted by his associate, Dave Balfour. But please ask your questions from the microphone in the middle of the floor over there, and state your name into the microphone. Keep your preambles as short as you can and ask your question. One question only to start with, please. If we have time, you'll be able to come back to the mic for further questions. Okay, so please, those that have questions, move up to the mic and ask your question. State your name first, short preamble, and then the question. Could you speak a bit closer to the mic, please? Lift it up. And
My question on the spring wheat test plots in particular, what was the previous crop on those test plots? Did you have, like, peas to put in nitrogen, or were they just on chem fallow?
Which spring wheat crops are those ones now?
Your spring wheat test plots that you showed the results of.
Okay,
there.
On those ones there, yes. That was previously, that field was probably a pea field, I suspect it may have been. I'd have to check with Richard Little. Is Richard Little here? I don't think he's here this evening. It's a possibility it wasn't peas in that field.
Okay. How would the test results be on a test plot where you had chem fallow in between there? No peas before. Just chem fallow with a check plot and your emissions test.
Craig Hinkey, he's in the crowd here, and he grows fall wheat on some rotations. Is that correct, Craig? And he had very reasonable results this past year. He had some ortho, so 1151 on a strip, and he had exhaust as a check against fertilizer. And was it three bushels more, Craig? One and a half bushels more with exhaust.
Okay, without peas as the
previous. No peas previously, is that right, Craig?
Okay.
Next questioner, please.
Thank you. My name is James Moore. I am the NDP candidate for Lethbridge West.
Gary, I want to thank you for your presentation. I have one comment and one question. You didn't mention the benefit to the earth of not putting fertilizer. We see with all of the runoff into the water systems, for example, down in even into the Mississippi River, where there's a great dead zone caused by that runoff. That's really important, too. I'm really happy to hear your presentation, but I have a concern. You know, you spoke about the cooperative spirit, the helping spirit of Alberta when your grandfather was here. You know, to survive, we need to help each other. You know, this is the spirit that I'm really interested in supporting and representing, but I'm a little bit worried. You know, I don't want to see Monsanto or one of these monster corporations get a hold of what you're doing. Have you got a defense mechanism in place there?
Yeah, I do, really, because in a way, a lot of farmers may think that my company is set up like Monsanto, where I have a TUA, and you know, intellectual property protection in today's world is you know, business-wise, it's an effective tool to further a technology, but when it becomes a multinational monopoly, then it becomes a problem. So I'm willing to collaborate with farmers, and if I can keep it in that method and we're successful, I hope to keep it that way, where it isn't a specific factory in a large city center. Right now, I've constructed 60 of these, and they have all been constructed in the family farm shop. And if I can keep doing that and it's successful, that'll be our motive, is to work with the strengths of every creative farmer.
Right on.
Thank you. Next questioner, please. My name is,
I'm too close to the mic. This about right? My name is Henning Mundel. And realizing that it was a limited amount of data you can present in a presentation like this, but also looking at this picture as an example, realizing how variable soil fertility is, did you have comparable fertility data prior to this season start to compare the fertilized field, check field, versus the emissions field, or how did you adjust for the variation or when you did take the samples?
A lot of the farms that we're working with have a lot of history, and they have agronomists, and they're doing rigorous fall testing every year. And with the research that Dr. Lorraine Bailey and Brandon with Chad Berry, the data tomorrow Dr. Bailey will be speaking about, and those fields had tests in the spring, and then we did a soil test in the fall to find out what was the mineral change.
Yeah.
And we find on the wheat strip that we did, it's an acidic soil. And acidic soil, the only problem with acidic soil is it has too much hydrogen in it. It's stuck on the clay particles, and it might have 30% hydrogen sticking there. When you put CO2 in the soil, I've seen this on our own farm, and we saw it again in Brandon, where the hydrogen at the fall test was down to 8%. So it's what it's doing is that CO2 is looking for something positive to react with, and when you put CO2 into that hydrogen present, it turns into carbonic acid, and it pulls that hydrogen off the clay, and it balances the pH. Similar to what the reactions are in the blood, pH control is CO2 in my body. If it goes too high, my brain tells me to breathe heavier. So CO2 is a very powerful element, and we see it raising the pH if it's acidic. And if it's a high pH soil, the problem is we've used too much phosphorus, and we've occupied calcium and let magnesium become dominating. So when you put CO2 in the soil, that carbonic acid will break calphos rock apart, and it'll raise the calcium level, flocculate the soil, and magnesium is more higher pH than what the calcium. So it'll tend to bring the pHs down. So it really, CO2 is wanting to bring it to center, and a lot of the fertilizers we use rip our pH apart. Does that He will answer it.
Well, the real important part to my question was the pre and post measurements.
And we're doing that, yeah. And we really see that our soils have higher calcium and higher phosphorus, and balanced pH is generally the picture.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Yes, Ken Dunstan from Coaldale. I'm wondering if you've done any work. You said your first project was, I guess you'd call it fertigation, the amount of loss that of your exhaust emissions because of fertigation, either through evaporation or just, you know, through the volatility of it. I'm wondering if you've done any work as to how much is lost in that method.
Okay. With the irrigation scrubbing system, it's a very big challenge because we have a lot of heat coming out of there, and the water gets hot really quickly. So you're not absorbing as much as we could. We do need to build a lot more effective prototypes. The volatilization doesn't happen when it's a nitrate nitrogen. It's not in the form of nitrogen that will actually go up into the atmosphere anymore. It's turned into a nitric acid, and that form of nitrogen is like what we lost when we lost our ammonium nitrate. The nitrate part is the kind of nitrogen that agriculture has lost, and it's a very efficient nitrogen. It was more expensive. But when you consider trying to make a chemical reaction with 8 pH and put urea in it and try and get ammonium, all you get is ammonia gas. So if you put that kind of chemistry into your pivot, definitely volatilization happens because there's not enough hydrogen in your river water to keep it in an ammonium form. It goes into ammonia, and it just volatilizes up like a frying pan.
How about the CO2 emissions?
Well, the carbonic acid is, if you think of the rain that we get in the summertime, the CO2 that's been emitted up into the atmosphere, the rain falling down catches the CO2, and that's one of the ways CO2 comes out of the atmosphere is through the rain, and the other way is through photosynthesizing. So once we get it attached to the water, it would probably stay as a carbonic acid and do reactions in our soil. So volatilization, once we get it attached, we're okay, but most likely at the motor, we would be losing a lot, and I have to develop that equipment a lot more, I'll admit that.
So at this point in time, then, the fertigation method is not as developed or as similar to your air seed drill or whatever?
Well, I spent more time on it, but we have farmers in this crowd that have got 500 horsepower Cummins engines scrubbing the emissions, and myself, it's a 200 horsepower John Deere engine. Those engines really emit a lot of NOx, and because they're running right full out, they're running very hot, and that's what makes a lot of nitrogen. So if we can develop that scrubbing system to be more effective at catching all those emissions, you really would have more nitrogen than what you needed with one motor running. But those are the things that, as a group, we can help each other, and once we raise enough funds, we can get engineers serious about this. Okay, thanks.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Hi, Gary. Gerald Perry from Coaldale. Could you please give us some further information on the potato growers down in Idaho on how many passes during the year they put the emissions in, please?
Yeah, the potato farmers down there took a chisel plow, and they don't have air seeders there, so they built their own system. And I believe they worked it about a foot deep with a 400-horsepower tractor, 450-horsepower case, with about a 20-foot foot chisel plow. And I believe they did 1,000 acres or so with that system to do some exploratory experiments. The biggest challenge that I've had is that when you work with agronomists and then the scientists that work with it, a lot of times the information is never released on how it turned out. Their observations that I heard from the agronomist is that wheel line where the fertilizer wasn't working very well. But, you know, I was there. The plants looked similar, but the potatoes didn't prove up. But if you have a salty soil, you have to irrigate more. So if you're having trouble with the irrigation system, it's going to look like you had a problem with that side. So with the farmers down there, the farmer's happy with it. He's seen results. But it's difficult, and I'm getting scientists and research places to believe me now that this is worth looking into. So I appreciate your farm there working with me, and we want to work together to see if we can improve the equipment. And if a potato farmer is working the land four or five times, he's probably burning to the acre. Maybe, he might be burning 4 or 5 gallons, maybe 10 gallons to the acre of fuel. So a potato plant requires a lot of nutrients. So if we can get the biofuel burning through your engine and direct that to the soil, your soils require a lot of correction, and I think that the emissions could probably help that.
Thank you.
Dwayne Pendergast, Gary. I've been following the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for about 20 years now, and I think I heard more good ideas in the last hour than in my previous 20 years. But I do wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what your science research colleagues are looking into with respect to your system, or maybe they can speak to that question themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm working with Dr. Lorraine Bailey in Brandon, in 2005, in Winnipeg, when AgriTrend had their annual meeting in the winter. They invited me to come down there and give a presentation to the scientists and their agronomists. And when I presented my technology there, Dr. Bailey heard me out, and he's been supporting our group since then. It's scientists don't endorse things until they're scientifically proven, but it's credible enough information to keep a senior scientist interested. And if Dr. Bailey is here, I'm not sure if he's wanting to give a comment right now or not, but Dr. Jill Clapperton also is a rhizosphere scientist that's been in Lethbridge at Research Center, and she's recently retired, and I'm hiring her to design our protocols and to do rigorous scientific experiments. You have to have the anecdotal farmers saying this is worthwhile. As a group, we have to raise enough money to fund ourselves so that we can get our NRC grants happening. You have to be able to pay for your experiments first, and then they may sponsor you. So it has to be sound science before you can really get anywhere, and I believe that I've stuck with it long enough that we're hopefully our CO2 exchange, that's the idea of a sponsoring 1 acre, you're sponsoring research. You're sponsoring the farmer, you're sponsoring the NCQuest company so that we can do really involved experiments like with potato farmers and with irrigation motors and with engineers. I'm bringing two disciplines together. I'm bringing the soil and pathologist scientists together, the rhizosphere scientists, and the engine engineering and the machinery engineering together to make agriculture happen. And we used to do it because we had a horse and a plow, and it's gotten very complex because not many of us can write a ECM computer program to change our engine. It's all sealed up, and we can't just change the timing on our engine. It's very complex. So we do need to involve higher disciplines, and we'll do that.
Yeah. Next question, please.
Hi, Gary.
Please tell us your name.
I'm Lloyd Peterson from Saskatchewan. Out where it's usually drier than most places, but this year we had a severe drought after torrential rains in the spring. It made it hard for us to seed. And then when we mudded it in, it quit raining. So you know what happened, the ground cracked. And I don't have any questions, but what I think maybe a lot of people here might like to hear is what happened after that. We made some tests. I took a 60-acre field, cut it diagonally, and seeded one half with 40 pounds of end, 4400. And the other angle was just emissions only. And monitors on the combine, when we combined it, never showed any difference, not one bushel. I thought there would be a little bit, but the crop to me looked the same, and that really surprised me. And sold me, that field sold me on the whole system, because that's what it's all about, is there's lots of things we have to learn about microorganisms and how to treat them and what to do. I should mention that I put Dr. Jackson on both sides. Mm-hmm. And those of you who don't know what that is, it's an enhancement of liquid product that activates the phosphorus in the soil. Mm-hmm. That is in the soil. You don't have to put extra phosphorus in. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to, like Gary spent a little bit of time in our area and we put on a few systems, that one that you got a picture up in front there, mm-hmm, is not the best one I've seen. Mm-hmm. I wanted him to have a picture of ours, but I guess his camera didn't work that day or something, but it can be put on quite neat, and you'll hardly even notice the system on my drill. Yeah. People have gone by my place. My drill sits right beside the road, and they've turned around a mile up the road and came back and had a look at it because they didn't see it the first time. Mm-hmm. Also, Rob is working on some improvements on the damper, mm-hmm, that you regulate to regulate the heat. That's, you have to regulate. It comes out at 800 degrees off the tractor, and at the fan we want it at about 130. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a little damper there, and that gets kind of a pain in the neck to have to, as the temperature changes during the day, you have to go back there and screw this thing open or shut. Well, Rob's coming out with something that I think will be on the market this spring. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that it'll be adjusted by the temperature from the cab.
Yeah.
And am I right, Gary?
Yeah, that's right, Lloyd. I think that that collaborating all of the observations he did this past year, yeah, and other farmers, myself and Rob and other people that have user systems, we're bringing that together and making it so it's more user-friendly. And everyone in this room that's used the system in past years knows the frustrations of tinkering. And, you know, with my irrigation motor, there's many times that I probably would have quit. And so we want to keep going forward, and we're definitely doing that. And I appreciate your information about your field there. I think that that is really what people are observing. It's yielding similar to fertilizer.
Yeah, I'll just mention one other thing, that our shop is open for, and Rob's going to help along with my son in installing some of the equipment that people might look at it and think it's a pretty simple thing, but it took us twice as long as we thought it would, and we're pretty handy with things, so if anybody needs a hand, we're there to help. And I'll just mention one more thing. A fellow said to me the other day, what do you think? No, I asked him, what do you think about this? And he said to me, he's been running this for 2 years. I've only run it for one. He said it's like changing from steel wheel tractor to a rubber tire. So I'm as excited as he is, and I hope everybody else is too, because it's a common thing. It's just we have to learn more about what Gary knows and get it in our head and put those things to practice, and I think we'll be all the better for it.
Thanks, Lloyd. I think that pretty well sums it up, that it's not easy, and it does take a lot of frustrating hours of withdrawal syndromes. You may just wish you could go and buy another truckload of fertilizer and be done with all the hassles. But farmers have stuck with us, and it's worked.
It's quite unlikely that people will hear you. If you want to make another comment, please go to the mic.
Just in case some of you are wondering, our system is on a 400-horse tractor on a 57-foot flexicoil air drill. So if you're wondering, you know, I just forgot to mention it. The previous crop that I'm talking about was a durum field seeded back to durum. And when we seeded a cereal on pea ground, we noticed when Gary was around and Rob about the end of June, 1st of July, we had staked out a swath down the lentil field with no emissions because there was no fertilizer involved. When we seeded lentils on durum ground, we never fertilized. We just let the lentils do their own fertilizing. So we put the emissions on the whole field except for two widths of the drill, would be 100 feet. And they'll verify it. When we looked at that, the plants were a third bigger, more bushy. You couldn't hardly see the rows anymore. And where we had no emissions, you could clearly see the rows and the plants were smaller. Now, when it come to the yield, I can't help you out because we had 42 degree temperature for 3 weeks straight. And every time those poor lentil crops come out every morning, they'd put some new flowers on the top, and by nighttime they were burnt off. And the same thing happened to the peas. So we never bothered testing them. They only went 8 bushels to acre, and it was weather. And to answer your question that you asked earlier, comparing chemfall with continuous crop, I believe is your question, you can't compare apples with oranges because the chemfallow most of the time would have way more moisture. So it's pretty hard to compare that.
Want to comment on that briefly?
Yeah, thanks, Lloyd. And, you know, there's so many complex things to make sense of, and that's why a farmer is a very good observer, and that's why I work with them.
Okay, next question, please.
Hi there. Yeah, Gary, I'm Chris Perry. We're farmer, Harold's brother. Just a quick question on, there's so many things coming down the pipe with carbon credits, and just wondering if you want to make any comment on, you know, obviously there would be a huge value for what you're doing here as well, so comments.
Okay, on the carbon credit, that's really why I started this CO2X change, CO2X.com, because I feel that the intensity emissions that the big emitters are working with compared to the farmer sequestering, it's like comparing, you know, an elephant and an ant. And they're paying farmers about $1.50 an acre, and we are the ones paying the big bills for the energy. So and we're going to guarantee that we're going to store that carbon forever. And it really isn't a balanced equation. So my CO2 exchange is designed to work with the CO2. Somebody is responsible for emitting it, and somebody's got to be responsible for fixating it. And my field, every acre, and your field, every acre, takes in those CO2 emissions. The oil company has the rights of the oil underneath your soil, underneath your farmland, and we have the surface right. And that surface right is to capture CO2 and build a plant, because plants are made of 45% carbon, 45% oxygen, 6% hydrogen, and 4% minerals. So when you're looking at a plant, it's a massive amount of CO2, a massive amount of carbon. It took in more CO2 from the atmosphere than what the total weight of the plant is. So we really need to realize what business we're in. Now when I'm standing in my field, I know what business I'm in. I'm in the carbon business. And that's why I started this whole study. Because when I stood in my field 7 years ago, I didn't realize that. And they're not telling you that today. When they're talking about the intensity emissions of the big emitters, Alberta itself does not have enough sequestering figures of farmland to capture even a small amount of that. So if they're going to balance this by 2050, like the Alberta government's talking about, you and I as public are the only ones that are going to solve that problem. Because if you have 5 cars in your yard and you take 10 airplane flights, and if you have a speedboat and a motorhome, and everybody around the world wants that, there's no way. The only way we can do it is if agriculture can produce biofuel without fossil fuel. And if we can make more use of the sun and the sky and have every acre photosynthesizing, Montana generally is 50-50. And a lot of areas around the world are not zero-till. I think that the numbers are about 6% of agriculture land is zero-tilled in the world. So, you know, it's a big change, like Trevor saying, that world economy and starvation and that kind of thing, we hope to address that and be part of helping that equation.
Thanks. Yeah, of course, the poorest farmers in the world don't have tractors. But if you look at India, if you look at China, if you look at Brazil, and these are the big producers, they certainly do have tractors. But I have a question for you, Gary, too, and that's on the economics. How much does this technology cost?
This technology costs the farmer a TUA, which we're used to in agriculture as a technology use agreement, and that allows your farm to use my technology. And it's $15,000 for a farm for the first unit, and it's $5,000 for each unit after. So the cash flow of the TUA is so that I can sponsor your distributor to sponsor you. Because in this method, who's going to teach you? It's got to be somebody that's used it before. I used it the first year. I sponsored 10 farmers the next year. The next year we had 60 farmers, and within that I had 5 distributors, and they were sponsoring their neighbor to use my method. And this year we may have, you know, 100 or farmers or maybe more, and it's just a network of farmers helping farmers. And if that's probably the only way that this will actually cover the globe and effectively change our atmospheric CO2 situation, no matter what anyone wants to do. It will just automatically happen, just like zero-till in Saskatchewan and Alberta. It was an economical decision to the farmer. It was worthwhile to zero-till, and is economical for the machinery companies to make one. So together as farmers, there's so many used equipment out there, the manufacturer's not going to come back and put one on. It's you and I. And I believe that's how we can do this. The material and the labor would approximately be between $10,000 and $20,000, depending on how elaborate it gets. And that's with basic farm fabrication. When it gets into being a more engineered piece of equipment with computers running it and all that kind of thing, it could be more. But most farms on one tractor are saving, you know, $200,000 worth of fertilizer compared to investing $25,000 to $30,000.
Thank you. Any more questions? Sir?
Knut Peterson is my name. I was wondering if you had any resistance from the people trying to make a living selling fertilizer and all these corporate entities that make a fat living on the farmers.
I haven't been approached by any large company at all. For a company to make a business investment, it has to be a very, you know, widely accepted project. And, you know, it's difficult to, like I said before, it's taken me 8 years to convince National Research Council that this is a good, sound, scientific thing to put some money into, let alone a risky an investor trying to take a risk. But really, it comes down, I'm really not out there to get Wall Street dollars. I'm out there to have the family farm invest some money that they would spend anyway at putting it into some knowledge on their farm and becoming educated in what business we're in, and then applying that science to make a profit. And if we can effectively market our carbon as a group of farmers on the internet, because CO2 is a virtual thing, it's around the world, it's global, and so is the internet. Somebody in Japan may well want to sponsor Canadian Acre. So we have a big job in advertising this. Those cards that you see can be personalized to everyone's farm. Anyone on our group can have their farm picture on there. It can take that serial number there, can take the gas station or whoever's marketing for you right to your acre. So this database, Fergus Raphael from Tangle Media and his crew has helped this website, has set it up, and has made the card for us. It'll have a magnetic strip on the back, and it'll be swipeable at a fuel pump. That's our next step. It's a patented idea. I patented that as well as the method of the bioactive method. So it's a marketing idea for you. It's your website because you're sponsoring me to set it up. And I'm getting Fergus to do that for us.
Thank you. Any more questions? Yeah, come up with follow-up questions now, please. We've got another 10 minutes. So, Dwayne, you have the floor. Yeah.
Dwayne Pendergast again, Gary. I have a website on climate change and carbon dioxide management. It attracts a tremendous amount of Google ads for companies trying to sell carbon credits. I wonder if you've thought of using Google ads to spread the word.
Yes, thanks.
Might make me some income.
Yeah. Fergus and his crew there are going to, we're really just launching this website now, and I appreciate your emails and that kind of thing. I apologize I haven't had time to really study it in depth, but it's definitely something we'll be looking at. We want to have our search engines working through. We would like to eventually get it so that it's working through airlines and all different sites that people are looking at every day. But one thing that I'll say is that we are working with carbon protocols, and our method is different than the carbon sequestered. But I believe that's why I set up this CO2 exchange, is because I believe that the sequestered carbon is such a small piece of the puzzle that we've got to balance the atmospheric oxidation and fixation equation, and that's the public's responsibility. So if we can work with credible carbon sites and work with the protocols, we will succeed. But it's the internet trading of public CO2 is not a very active thing. The big emitters are being forced today in Alberta to comply. It's a willing, free will sponsorship in the public. But I think there's enough people out there that go to some entertainment in the evening for a lot more money than sponsoring 1 acre. And so this is what I hope to get the message out, that we want the public to take a look at our website, read it through, give us feedback, but do sponsor 1 acre and track that acre and try and get your carbon footprint to fit into 1 acre. And I would imagine that most people will be surprised in this room. They might be 10 or 15 acres that they're occupying, and we have a carbon calculator on our website. Find out what your carbon footprint is and try and each year at least reduce it a bit. I'm not saying cut it all off. We can't. We enjoy our freedom in our life. But if we want to have it happen by 2050, I don't think it's going to happen any other way than agriculture being the biggest part of it all.
Thanks. Next question, please.
Hi, Michelle McEwen. Quick question. just directly related to what you're talking about is how much are you asking your average consumer to pay for their acre of carbon sequestration?
Okay, for a consumer, 1 acre, it depends on what kind of crop it is. I have Dr. Dave Belfour doing my writing, and he spent many hours researching through Ag Canada of how much carbon can we calculate that a wheat plant takes in. So it depends if it's growing on the black soil or brown soil. It depends if it's irrigated or not. So I'm sort of doing an average. I'm saying that an average wheat crop that might produce 50 bushels would take in 10,000 pounds of CO2. So if you go to our website, it really is variable. And this is a pilot project to find out if the consumer out there is willing to sponsor an acre. And we have all different price ranges from probably $18 an acre all the way up to probably $80 an acre. So you may be a person that might have be in Calgary where you could ride the C-Train and you could use a pedal bike and you probably fit an $18 carbon footprint. But if you have all of the modern enjoyment things in your life that use carbon, you might be 10 acres. So, and it would cost you a half a cent a pound of CO2.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, next question, please.
Rick McIntyre from Churchbridge, Saskatchewan. I was a first-time user this year, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot here, but I was wondering, you had about 50 or 60 farmers that used it this year. I'm wondering how many came to the meeting.
We have registered. Yeah, people can put up their hands here that have used the system and built one this year, and so it's a good turnout. We have, I believe, registered about 80 people, and some of those are their hired man or their wife or whatever, but we have, I believe, about 65 farms that are collaborating with me. So. 80 people, 65 farms. One thing I want to mention is that we have a few people missing because we had a farm tragedy with one of our families. I want to bring the awareness that when you're out testing your air drill, don't take risks. This wasn't because of an air drill. It was a tractor that was loading hay, and the bale fell between the wheels, and the tractor was stuck. And he couldn't get his door open, couldn't get out. So he managed to back the tractor up and lock it in gear and shut it off. He was being responsible. But when he got out, the tractor moved forward and pinned him. And he was able to call on 911. By the time they got there, he was unconscious. So, we're in the most risky business there is. Agriculture is the most dangerous industry. And so we must be careful. Don't go and jump onto a tractor when it's moving. And I've seen many people do it when I'm out testing. So be careful.
Yes, please. Yep. Please come up to the mic. We've got room. We've got time for about another two questions, short ones.
Rod Dixon from Foremost. I was just wondering if you've had anybody do any fertilizer, any of this seeding with no fertilizer at all, back-to-back, say barley or wheat, and if you have, for how many years? And was there yield potential for it?
Okay. The question was, I couldn't hear it real clear, but I think it was there back-to-back with no fertilizer? And is there a yield report? And we have Dr. Lorraine Bailey's information that will be released tomorrow. We have farmers that have grown the emissions for 2 years now, because that's the only data we have with them on our own farm. We haven't used fertilizer for 5 years on some of our fields, and it's sustainable farming because the plants will express exactly to how much rainfall you have and how fertile your soil is. We're kind of fooling ourselves, hoping and planning for that once in 10-year crop and putting all those nutrients up front and expecting that you're going to get it. My plan is, let's put exhaust in the ground, let's let the crop interact with that soil, let's make a decision as we go through the season. And if it needs something by testing, I'm saying let's use it. But most farms that use my method are doing the bioactive method, and that's an ideal. It's let's use the tractor emissions, let's let the plant interact with the soil, and let's be happy with what we get at the end. Because what the farmers are reporting that stuck with me last year is that their grain was heavier, and they had an economical return as good as their neighbor and maybe better, because their neighbor suffered from the lack of water. Did that answer it? And we have information. We can get that to you if you want.
Okay, last question, please.
Hi, Gary. Gerald Perry again. Can you see a detriment by putting multiple applications on a crop in 1 year? And I'm, once again, referring to our potatoes. We have the possibility to put five applications on before we plant. Can you see a detriment there?
Well, that's something that we would want to, you know, address. Some soils, the makeup of the soil, it could be too much. You can overstimulate your biological life, because if you just think of it as a manure pile, if you get it going too much, it's too hot. So organics are fertility. You can get too much fertility, and it could burn up. But with irrigation and the yields you want for potatoes, with the amount of fertilizer salts that you guys are using, it's a lot. And so I don't know if in an irrigation field, if you could actually overdo it, but that is my question, and that's my concern too, is that we want to research this. I want everyone to be in a group so we can share the information, so we can hire credible scientists, so we can be careful if that is a concern and if that is a reality.
Well, thanks very much, everyone. We've come to the end of our special session now. I'd like to ask you to join me in thanking Gary for his presentation. And we're going to be looking at this. I mean, this is a bold new experiment. It's a very appropriate experiment, and certainly we in the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs will be watching not just Gary, but also all of you who have come up and have started this. And I would like to add my personal congratulations and support to you all. Thank you very much, everyone. We look forward to seeing you again at the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I think we've got to do anything or check out anything that, like that. I mean, the thing is, it's there.
Well, I'm getting a little skeptical of the whole climate change, carbon sequestration thing. Certainly got nothing against building soil.